We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, thanks for hanging out with us here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in 45 minutes, we will head out to Arrowhead, hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Eric Fisher, and Juan Thornhill. We'll get to our Chiefs red half hour 30 minutes from now as well. You heard it there from Serta. The breaking news in the NFL today is something to continue to keep an eye on as the week goes on, as the Titans and Steelers game postponed from Sunday afternoon, looking like Monday or Tuesday. You could have a Tuesday night NFL game, which would be interesting for a variety of reasons. Also, if you're the NBA, you're hoping and praying that the NFL moves the game to Monday and not Tuesday, because Tuesday will be, at that point, would it be game three, I guess, of the NBA Finals. Game one of the NBA Finals is tonight with the Lakers and the Heat. But next Tuesday, you would all of a sudden have a middle of an NBA Finals going up against an NFL game, if that's actually going to be the case for the Steelers and the Titans. And then still see what happens with the Vikings and the Houston Texans game, because the Vikings just played Tennessee. But fortunately, right now, no positive tests for the Minnesota Vikings. So just impacting the Titans and Steelers.
For now. Like, I don't know. It's fine. I'm not going to overreact to a game being moved to Monday or Tuesday yet, but it's the first time we actually see it impacting the NFL, so I can't ignore it either. And Gold, it's two of the teams who are currently 3-0 in both the Steelers and the Titans. And then the following week, those teams now presumably on either just one day short rest, like Kansas City just played a Monday night game, so no big deal, or two nights full short rest because they play on a Tuesday night, the Titans would have to take on the Bills. And the Steelers would have to take on an Eagles team, admittedly playing pretty terribly, but on shorter rest than they were originally anticipating. And it's not like they're getting more time really heading into this game on Tuesday night, because essentially they can't do much around the facility other than, well, we can talk more about what we're going to do, but they can't actually try to implement any of it right now, is all those teams are in a holding pattern. So it's affecting the teams. You're saying it's not affecting the Chiefs schedule-wise, but it is definitively affecting the Chiefs if you think about how it might impact the 3-0 teams. The Steelers, the Titans, and the Bills.
Yeah, the Titans would have just 5 days between their game with the other 3-0 team, the Buffalo Bills. You do look at the 3-0 teams.
Get an extra rest?
That exists. So the Chiefs, obviously, are 3-0. The Steelers, 3-0. Titans, 3-0. And then the Bills, that's your AFC 3-0 teams. And then over on the NFC side, it's the Packers, Seahawks, and Bears. And it's pretty simple. If you were trying to go through and rank out like who's the most legit and who's not, you start off the top. Obviously, it's Kansas City, the most legit of the 3-0 teams. But at the bottom, it seems pretty simple to me. I think everybody would agree that the Chicago Bears are the worst 3-0 team. Now, you'd rather be the worst 3-0 team, obviously, than 1-2 or 2-1 if you're Chicago, but they're by far the worst 3-0 team. And then
why are you picking on Chicago?
It's absolutely Chicago, and it's the Tennessee Titans.
Because they're garbage.
It's absolutely still the Tennessee. It's the Tennessee Titans too, man. It's the Tennessee Titans are next to
that. What is with you and the Titans? Why are they the second worst?
Yeah, because they have not been impressive to me whatsoever from day one when they played the Denver Broncos. Do we now learn more and more? And I know there's more injuries.
They got the best version of the Broncos, at least, didn't they?
That's saying a lot. That's saying a lot.
They got a slightly healthier Denver Broncos squad.
They had a banged up. They still had a Denver Broncos team that did not have Von Miller. Yeah, they had partially healthy Courtland Sutton. And I understand they had the starting quarterback they had to face instead of a third string. But like Drew Locke, all of a sudden, we still don't know really what Drew Locke was to begin with. Yes, it's better than Jeff Driskel, obviously.
Just to be clear,
the Titans almost lost and should have lost to the Vikings last week as well.
So the Steelers beat the Giants by 10, almost lose to Denver themselves, and only beat the Texans
Steelers
by them.
Steelers have looked good in their wins, though.
The Steelers are exactly the same as the Titans.
No,
they
not
are
at
co-tied
all, man.
For the second worst 3-0 team.
One team looks like they can actually put up points and come from behind, the Pittsburgh Steelers. The other team, the Tennessee Titans, look like they're just miserable offensively still. They look miserable offensively. The Steelers, I can say, with their weapons, can get in a shootout with somebody, and I would feel confident they could at least hang around. The Tennessee Titans, I don't see them doing that whatsoever.
In a year in which teams are averaging, I think you told me before the show, 5 points more per game.
Yeah, 5.4, yep.
So 5 points more per game. How many 30-point games do you think the Steelers have?
They haven't been in a shootout. I just told you, haven't been in a shootout.
How many 30-point games do the Titans have?
What, two?
Yeah, correct. So, like, the only point I'm trying to make here, the Titans have played the cupcakiest of cupcake schedules. They've played Denver, Jacksonville, and a Minnesota team who has played bad. But I'm not exactly going to write up. We just did our top five, bottom five yesterday.
Yep.
Where did you have the Giants? Second worst team in the NFL?
Believe so.
That's one of the games that they've played. Where did you have the Broncos?
I don't know if I had him in the bottom five.
I did. Sadly, I had him in the bottom five. And that's because they were facing Jeff Driscoll, obviously, after Drew Lock got hurt in the game. They beat that team. Only by five, by the way, the Steelers. And then they played the Texans, a team we think is good, but is 0-3, so we're not really sure is good, by a whole touchdown. So, like, no. The story's not out on the Steelers yet either. Like, to me, it's not that I'm not picking on, like, the reason why this is, like, us following predictions. I wasn't as high on the Steelers. You weren't as high on the Titans. I wasn't as high on the Titans as you are on the Steelers. But to me, those are the two teams at 3-0 that are exactly the same. I have no evidence that the Steelers and I have no evidence that the Titans are actually anywhere close to decently, like, really good teams versus just, like, fine. They're 3-0, but they haven't played anybody or shown me anything
teams are dominant. Just knowing, and I think Mike Vrabel's a very good head coach, but I also, it's not even close. Mike Tomlin's absolutely the better head coach in that scenario. And last year, with three different quarterbacks, the Steelers still found a way to win eight games, if I'm not mistaken, eight games a year ago. And now
only won nine, but they had to have it with two. Like, if you're going to say three different quarterbacks, the Titans didn't have to do it with two.
Well, you could also say they made the wrong decision on who they were starting to begin the year. So who gets blamed for that?
Well, I understand, like, it's not an injury to Ben Roethlisberger. That could be a coaching decision. And Mariota's shown enough in his career to make you feel like that's the case. All I'm saying is that, like, I think you're just writing it off as...
We'll see.
Making it sound like...
I just watched the Titans, and I think, man, they just look like an average football team. I am not impressed whatsoever when I watch Tennessee, and I am more when I watch Pittsburgh. I look at Pittsburgh, and you can say maybe it's because of past history and all that. Well, it's because I look at the weapons that exist. I know Tennessee hasn't had a healthy A.J. Brown yet to this point. I'll give you that if you want me to. But I'm watching the Pittsburgh Steelers. Defensively, they are a top...
Defensively, that's the big difference. They're about the same.
I disagree. Looking at the weapons that exist, Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, James Conner, and Benny Snell. To me, it's not the same as A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, and A.J. Brown that's not healthy. And then who else? Adam Humphries?
But performance-wise is what I'm saying. They've performed about the same.
Like, I like their tight end, Jonnu Smith. I do like what I'm seeing from him.
Yeah, Jonnu Smith's been one of the best tight ends in the NFL this year. Ryan Tannehill has more passing yards, one less touchdown passing, and the same number of interceptions at one. He has 800 yards, six touchdowns, one pick. Ben Roethlisberger, 777 yards, seven touchdowns, one pick. I'm saying they've performed very similarly with relatively equally bad schedules. Not quite, because the Texans are certainly a better team than the third team they've faced. All I'm saying is, like, if I'm ranking all the 3-0 teams, it's Chiefs, it's Packers, it's Seahawks, it's in my mind almost, and the Bills haven't played anybody either, so it's Chiefs are the best 3-0 team. Packers and Seahawks are the next best 3-0 teams. Mm-hmm. And then you can throw everyone in a pile that isn't the Bears as the co-tie for the other 3-0 teams. The Steelers, the Titans, those teams, the Bills, they all feel the same to me as in beat a good team and then I'll have a real conversation with
you. Yeah, it's funny. Obviously, we have a different view of where we're at with the Steelers and
the
Titans.
Sort of be the tiebreaker, I guess, in this situation.
I think absolutely. I agree with you with Chiefs, Packers, Seahawks, but then I would go Steelers, then I would go... Actually, I would go Steelers and Bills, and at the bottom, it's the Titans in the Chicago Bears. I don't think it's very close as far as there's the
gap. It's rose-colored glasses because of... And again, the Steelers' defense is better than the Titans. I'm not here to tell you otherwise. The Titans are 3-0, and like I was picking on the offensive stats. You should have just been throwing the defensive stats back at me. They let 30 points up to the Vikings. They actually
have had to
score more points in order to do it. The Steelers' games haven't been as close as the Titans' games because their defense is so much better.
I do agree with Gold that the Bears are bottom and Titans are ahead of them, but I think there is a significant gap in between the two. Like, I agree we haven't seen the Titans at full strength. A.J. Brown, I think, is a superstar potential caliber player who has not been involved at all. And their defense is dealing with a lot of injuries right now, although Jadeveon Clowney has done absolutely nothing for them. So I don't think that they're – I think they still have potential to win that division. I think they can still be a playoff team, but I don't think anybody should be scared of them. I don't think the Bears are a playoff team.
No, I don't think so either. But how close are the Titans to the Steelers, I guess, is really the Titans, Steelers, Bills, Packers, Seahawks
till,
are essentially
wait
what we're
Monday
arguing.
Night or Tuesday night, I guess, whenever they play. They'll go head-to-head.
You know, that is kind of fun. It does feel like you and I should have a bet for that game, shouldn't we?
And they'll go head-to-head.
It's just kind of weird in the COVID times now that they're there.
I'll give you that.
Like,
I mean, clearly, if one beats the other head-to-head, at least for a couple weeks.
We get to kind of throw it in each other's face. Yeah, the Titans go out and win Tuesday night and be like, see, I told you.
Yeah.
Or if it's 27-27, we're going to come out of that game and be like, I told you they're equals.
They better not tie.
It doesn't matter.
If
the Steelers beat the Titans 28-27, I'm still feeling like I'm having the same argument where it's like, I told you these teams are close. Whether the Titans beat the Steelers or the Steelers beat the Titans, if it's a really close game, my argument for they're the same. You have more in the line. You need the Steelers to win easily to prove the point more than I do. I'm telling you they're equals.
Yeah, I hope the Steelers go and kick their ass. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, maybe. We'll find out. This does give them 2 extra days to get Deontay Johnson through concussion protocol.
That is big for them.
So that's a big deal.
And by the way, we still don't know who the 4 players are for the Titans that are testing positive for COVID. So, I mean, I'm not going to name, but like you think of your quarterback or running back or whatever. Yeah, like, that changes the game.
I'm going to have a little bit of leverage in the wait.
Because
if it's Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill for Tuesday, I'd be like, I don't think you're going to be able to judge me on.
You sure? You don't think Logan Whiteside is the quarterback's going to get it done?
Why do you know the Titans' backup quarterback?
Because I had to look it up because I was very curious. They have 2 quarterbacks on the roster. We're doing picks on this show. We're doing Rocket Mortgage
Survivor?
Pro Pick'em and all that.
You can pick the Steelers for Tuesday night on Survivor for Thursday.
No, that's not happening.
What would happen if I do choose them? Do I have to do a backup pick in case they don't play their game?
No, you just lose.
Yeah, you're done.
Whoa!
Yeah, you can't get a free week.
I didn't lose a game.
You don't get a free week because then you're going to use it as an advantage if the game doesn't happen. No.
That's an X. That's an X. If the game gets canceled, that's an X.
Let's get some clarification.
I'm going to need a ruling from Speck on that before.
That seems clear to everyone.
Otherwise, you have a huge advantage, Cody. The game goes forward. Unless you're going to say later in the season, you got to pick 2 teams that 1 week.
Like I still am responsible for that game in like week 8 or something.
Like you're automatically stuck picking the Titans like the next week against the Buffalo Bills. You want to pick your Titans? You get them the next week as well. That's how it's
picking the Titans. Let's not dial it back. I think I might still pick the Steelers.
Be excluded from this week's
picks. It depends on the week. I just don't know.
Okay.
Well, we were talking about
minutes talking about the Steelers.
I was saying like
Titans.
If the Titans were missing some players.
Okay.
Sorry. Let me clarify.
Right. I was like, wait a second.
I'm going to need a ruling from that on Spec, by the way.
And then real quick, over on the 0-3 side, are any of these teams have a chance to bounce out of it? Giants,
Falcons, maybe?
Giants, Falcons, Vikings, Jets, Texans, Broncos are all 0-3. And then let's throw the Eagles there. They're 0-2-1. They should have lost the game the way they performed down the stretch there.
Texans, I guess. And then
it's still the Texans. It's
maybe
still the
Falcons,
man.
But I think they might be emotionally wrecked now.
It's the Texans.
Blow 2 leads.
It's the Texans and the Vikings, and they go head-to-head this week, too, if that game goes on a schedule.
Someone's going 0-4.
And if you go 0-4, you're not recovering from that. I understand there's extra playoff spots. So the Vikings, if they go down, they're done, which will be one of my worst picks of the season overall. I had them in the playoffs, so yikes. And the Texans I have in the playoffs as well. So this is a big game in that regard. I think the Texans win. Based on how their schedule goes, the Texans have a chance to bounce back and get to a position where we could still be talking about them getting in a wild card. I don't think they're as trash as they look record-wise, given the fact
they've had a bad schedule.
Yeah. And then the Eagles 0-2-1.
There's no one else. I mean, just ignore the Giants, Jets, Broncos, who are hurt, Eagles. I mean, they're technically a half game up on these other
ones. The Jets are going to beat the Broncos Thursday, though.
Take it in Survivor.
Take the Jets. No way.
I just like the rest of the way now with Survivor, the longer we get, the more I try to talk people into bad decision-making. Like, come on, take that Thursday night game. You'll enjoy it, please. No, it's all the same at this point. Those 0-3 teams, someone has a better chance this year than in any other because of the extra playoff spot, but you have to choose the teams who have actually done any winning in their history. So Falcons, Vikings, Texans are the only ones you can have a conversation about.
Yeah.
And I still lean towards the Falcons only because they should be 2-1. But, like, are they just emotionally devastated after the way this season has started because they've blown 2 humongous leads already? They should be 2-1. The Falcons team definitively should be 2-1.
This is what the Falcons do, though.
The Giants, the Jets, the Texans, the Broncos, the Eagles, they've earned their record. But the Falcons actually should have a better record and don't because they keep blowing giant leads.
This is Dan Quinn every year, though, because what's going to happen is because they do have talent on the roster, they're eventually right around the middle, week seven, when things people say, well, Dan Quinn might have a week left, then they're going to win 3 of 5 or 4 of 5, and all of a sudden, Dan Quinn, they'll be talking about him saving his job. I don't think that's going to happen this go around, but that's what's happened the last couple of seasons.
Sure.
So we'll go out to Arrowhead in about 30 minutes or so, hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes here on 610 Sports Radio. Now we're 3 weeks in. We're not quite at the quarter pole of the season, but MVP voting, I think it's been narrowed down. I think what happened on Monday night really narrowed things down. If you're trying to think about putting money on anybody
already
to win
narrowed?
MVP, I think it has been narrowed down 3 weeks in to 4 guys. Don't waste your money on anybody else. And the 4 guys are Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Aaron Rodgers. Those are the only 4 guys you should be even thinking about putting money on at this point in time. Lamar Jackson, to me, eliminated himself on Monday night. And look, I think Lamar Jackson still is a very good quarterback. He was an MVP a year ago for a reason. He's still going to put up some massive numbers this season. But you cannot win MVP in a year where you go head-to-head against another guy that's going to be down to the stretch in the running in Patrick Mahomes for MVP.
Sure.
And throw for 97 yards on Monday Night Football in the game of the year against the best team in football. You can't have that on the resume for you to win MVP this year, especially when you're seeing the unbelievable play from Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen as well. Those are the 4 guys. To me, that's it. I don't want to hear about Kyler Murray or anybody else after, especially the way Kyler Murray played in a loss to the Lions.
Yeah,
that
well.
Can't happen either. It is these 4 guys, Russ, Mahomes, Allen, and Rodgers.
I think, yeah, that feels right to me. And Patrick Mahomes is clearly the favorite, so that's good.
Clearly? Vegas would say otherwise.
I didn't say Vegas favorite.
Because Vegas would still say Russ, man. Vegas still has Russ as the favorite.
He might get some sympathy votes because he's never had...
Mahomes everybody is made clearly
his,
the second
made this big
option.
Deal about how Russell Wilson's never had an MVP vote, and so he'll get some at the end.
If it's close, yeah, you realize Mahomes won't win it if it's close, right? We know how this goes.
I know, because Russell doesn't have one.
But if it's Mahomes and Allen, the same thing would apply because people would vote for Josh Allen.
I think there's a little more close of a sympathy vote when it comes to Russell Wilson because we've spent so much time talking about that. Josh Allen has been shockingly good in his time. Like, I have clearly underestimated where maybe he is as a throw. We don't even, like, remember every time we have these conversations about who's the likely guy to be the challenger for Patrick Mahomes? Do you ever mention Josh Allen? I told you yesterday.
No, absolutely not.
In his last 14 starts at the NFL level, 33 touchdowns and 3 picks. Those are MVP stats. And we don't even mention Josh Allen. We're like, oh, could it be Deshaun if Bill O'Brien ever like just loses his job like he should? Or could it be Lamar Jackson, a team that now he's beaten 3 times in a row? We don't even mention Josh Allen in that conversation. He's the guy you probably should bet on because you're probably getting the best odds. And
yeah,
he's put up he puts up some comedy numbers sometimes in that end. Russell Wilson is the Vegas favorite. I understand why he's the Vegas favorite. But Patrick Mahomes last week against this Ravens, he just showed you what the offense can be. And I'm pretty sure that was just like them turning on the switch for the rest of the year. And now I get to see the offense that I was expecting to see before the season started.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe they have a brief hiccup because Bill Belichick frustrates some teams. But I'm pretty sure Mahomes and the Chiefs offense just turned on the switch, which means catch-up time against Russell Wilson doesn't become that hard.
Over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 913-576-7610. From the 913, Cam Newton, clearly a top three MVP. I just completely disagree with that. He's having an unbelievable season. He's the guy that's the front-runner for NFL Comeback Player of the Year. I don't think he's got a chance really to be the MVP this year. If you do want to know just what Vegas is saying overall, they did update his thing. The gap has tightened a little bit. Russ is still the favorite at +175. Mahomes +275. So for those that don't bet, $10 would win you $27.50 on Mahomes right now. $100, obviously, $275. And then Josh Allen is +1200. So $10, $120 is what you would get if Josh Allen. But the actual odds, it's Russ, Mahomes, Rodgers, Lamar, Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, Kyler, and then Cam is how they have it. So I agree with 4 of them. Again, I think Lamar eliminated himself. I think you have to take Lamar out of the running for that.
Just done, huh? Just he's
you,
the
Cody, because if it comes down to a MVP. Close, if it's, it comes know, down close to these guys, you can't have a 97-yard passing performance, a full game you played on that stage too. It's not one of those people forget about that. That was against the Kansas City Chiefs.
He'll always
Chiefs.
Have the rushing yards to buoy him because like really his performance is 180 yards.
Still.
I think you can have 180-yard total yard performance in an MVP season, but you can't have many, and their division's really tough, and their schedule's not as easy as it was a year before. So, no, I don't think that it's there. I still think Mahomes is the guy, I would assume. Like, I'm not betting any money on Russ because I think Mahomes could just as easily win the MVP, and I'm getting better odds to be betting Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, then you
because I think the switch has flipped. He's like I feel actually if you made me bet right now, like I had to bet, and it was equal money across the board, I think I would still bet Mahomes. Because I'm telling you right now, I think Mahomes is going to win it.
If it was okay, so if it's equal money, then I would go Russ. If it's right now where the odds are at, there's no way I would put them on an MVP discussion this early in the season with the odds that I'm getting. There's no way I would ever put money on Russ to win it. There's no value. It would be somebody like Mahomes or further back. Most likely, I'd actually put money on Josh Allen just because it's plus 1200. I'll take a $10 bet to win 120. Thank you.
Nah.
$10 bet to win 27 doesn't really do it for me.
I'm just saying, if it was even money across the board, I'd still take Mahomes right now through 3 weeks.
And we'll hear from Patrick Mahomes coming up at 11:45. Also, Patrick Mahomes one-on-one exclusively with the guys on The Drive this afternoon at 2:15. Don't want to miss that. Bill Belichick did look a little more refreshed, as Ben Volen mentioned when he joined us for the Boston Globe in the 10 o'clock hour. Looked a little more refreshed at his press conference the other day, talking about the Chiefs. Got some rest, maybe feeling a little bit better about his team, although you would imagine Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs offense would keep you up at night very, very often whenever you have them on your schedule. And this is what Bill had to say about the Chiefs and how they just continue to evolve offensively.
Yeah, Andy continues to, you know, expand his scheme. And, you know, they've always had a pretty broad attack. They continue to have that. Certainly, Edwards has given them a, you know, explosive player in the backfield, and that's, you know, more than what they had last year. So that's why they drafted him, and he's delivered that for them, you know, in the three games this year. They have they're very well coached. They have an excellent attack. They have a lot of good players. They're very experienced in their system. And they can do a lot of things, no question.
I'm surprised he didn't just give it. Well, look, they're a really good football team. What else you want me to say? Actually, like he actually gave a.
That was an actual reasonable response.
And that's we've called a lot of people have mispronounced Clyde Edwards-Helaire's name, or Helaire if you're Steve Levy, or Helaire if you're everybody else around draft time and things like that. But that was a new. I haven't heard anybody just say Edwards. He just called him Edwards. Edwards.
It's making his life easy. CEH is what when Mina Kimes came up with this. That was the diagnosable one. CEH. That makes everyone's life a lot easier if you're going through it. No, I mean they are tough to defend, but he's saying that and they've always had a varied scheme. But Bill Belichick has actually done a really good job against the Chiefs, taking away the thing that they do the best. I just don't know how he does that this week, based on what I just saw them do. Who do you take away when they have five players with 60-plus yards and four different players with a touchdown, including the left tackle and a fullback? That's where, you know, that's where Bill's going to have a hard time.
Okay, we're going to take Tyreek Hill out, and we'll find a way to also take Travis Kelce out, which good luck, by the way.
But so even, now you're in single coverage with McColl.
Even if you do that, yeah, you've got McColl. DeMarcus Robinson, who really didn't play much the other night, but
we saw with Sammy Watkins, who's going to join us tomorrow, by the way, at 10:30. We have exclusive Chiefs player interviews every single week, 10:30 on Cody and Gold. Here on your official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs, Sammy Watkins, our guest tomorrow. But when you look at what he's done, too, he's become this, like, permanent third down threat. You try to cover up everything else, and then Sammy Watkins just picks you apart.
Suddenly, he's almost that safety blanket for Patrick Mahomes, and some of those plays that were ridiculous from Patrick, being able to scramble a little bit and buy himself some time, and they're sure enough, right, you know, 7-8 yard pickup. And I think Sammy averaged about 9 yards receiving yesterday, or on Monday night, that is. And he was always there. He was always there available for Patrick Mahomes. Bill Belichick also did mention, though, just what he thought overall of the Chiefs' performance going up against a team like Baltimore Monday.
Another impressive performance like usual. They're really dominant in the first half. You know, basically scored 31 points there, in a half of football on the road. So against a good football team. So they're a very explosive group. Played the Ravens well defensively. They're a good football team, very talented, well coached, play with a lot of poise and discipline. We know we're gonna have our work cut out for us in Kansas City. It's a championship football team, and you know, we're gonna have to play our best game.
The key there, and that's
and coach it.
The key there is we have to play our best game, and they essentially scored because he knows the missed field goal, the mixed extra point. They essentially scored 31 points in a half on the road against one of the best defenses in the NFL. He knows. He said, we're going to have to play our best game. That's not the case for the Patriots very often. They can beat a lot of teams and not play their best game. Chiefs, too, by the way. They didn't play even their best game. They didn't play their best game against the Ravens last week. They played their best game offensively, but they didn't play their best game every single facet of the ball last week, and they still won.
Coming up in 90 seconds, Serta's got his fantasy flash staying with the Baltimore Ravens. He'll take a look at their backfield situation. We'll get to the Chiefs right half hour. We'll head out to Arrowhead. You're going to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and also the biggest mistakes that teams might be making against the Chiefs.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio. Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
The Chiefs Red Half Hour is presented by Twin Peaks. Eat, drink, scenic views. You can enjoy Twin Peaks without ever even having to get up off your couch. Order up your favorites today on DoorDash, Postmates, or Uber Eats. Visit TwinPeaksRestaurant.com/order-online. Here in about 15 minutes, we'll head right out to Arrowhead and hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Eric Fisher, fresh off that touchdown catch, and Juan Thornhill, who kind of got the sense, at least on Monday night against the Ravens, at least early in the game specifically, he was feeling more maybe comfortable, more confident in, I guess, his body where he's at off the ACL. Like, he looked aggressive. He looked a little more like he was just playing than thinking, and maybe some more trust, Cody, in the knee a little bit. We'll hear from Juan Thornhill coming up in about 15 minutes or so. And the way that game went too, from the beginning, you felt like that opening decision on the opening drive from Baltimore is representative of a mistake that you continue to see teams make against the Chiefs.
The thing that teams do, and I don't know that I'll be honest, I think some of it is the Chiefs forcing teams into this mode as a result of the things they do well. But the Ravens did exactly this, and it cost them. And the Texans tried to do this, and it cost them, which is trying to play the Chiefs like the Chiefs. Like, this doesn't work. Like, what happened to the Ravens was, and again, I think there is a blueprint for how to beat the Chiefs. It's not a great one, and it still requires them to be more off than they normally are in a given week. We know that it starts with pressure with the front four, which is probably the key to beating any team. If you can do that, you're in good shape. But one thing is to never get out of your offensive game plan. Even going back to the Titans game last year, when they were behind the entire time to Kansas City and still beat them, they never stopped doing what they do well. And what happened was against the Ravens yesterday, a lot of their rushing yards, Gold, came from broken pass plays, not from designed runs, not from the type of offense they have typically done. And I feel like going into the offseason, when Lamar Jackson has been running a little bit less this year, they've been trying to throw it more to do it, is they feel like they got to compete in the gun show with Patrick Mahomes, and it just simply isn't going to happen. And what I see happen a lot in games is teams who are super run heavy or even super pass heavy try to do something to combat more what they do and instead do the things that we talk about all the time, which is play your game. The Chiefs have been guilty of that in times past, I think, with the Patriots games. I think a lot of teams were guilty of that in Patriots games. And I feel like I'm seeing it again with the Chiefs. The Ravens didn't play their game. And not because Kansas City just absolutely forced them out of it, but because they felt like you feel this need to keep up immediately.
Well, I think, it's also a little bit of a trap that you get in. But at the same time, if you're the Baltimore Ravens on Monday night, like the way that game started, the opening drive, like that was them playing like the Baltimore Ravens, that opening drive. Now, you can argue they should have gone for it instead of kicking a field goal and make it 3-0. And that just goes to, hey, field goals aren't going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. The same way we would have said heading into that game on Monday, hey, field goals against the Ravens aren't going to beat the Ravens. That would have been the same thought process. I don't know if that's so much a, hey, Baltimore was playing the Chiefs game. And what happened as the game went on, of course, was, well, the Chiefs built to lead, and it absolutely took the Ravens out of it.
I know, but they should have just kept doing what they do. The only way to beat them is to be good at what you're good at.
The Ravens shouldn't have to do it as much as, we for example, the week before with the Chargers, because I told you the week before with the Chargers, clearly,
so that's what the Chargers must be. They tried to play their own game. They did what they do.
Right. So that, like, yeah, but look, I disagree a little bit. Like, I think the Chargers actually have to be, like, I think the Chargers, or a team that's doesn't have the roster the way the Chiefs are built up to be, I think you have to be super aggressive if you're a team like the Chargers,
but if
or otherwise
it's not who you are.
Are you talking about just actual on an everyday down, or are you talking about some of the decision making processes?
No, obviously some of the
fourth down conversions and whether or not you're kicking a field goal.
I'm talking about every down. I think the reason why the Chargers hung with the Chiefs was, look, the decisions in the moment to be aggressive, to go for those things, I think against the Chiefs you just always be going for those things. That to me is a little bit different. The part I'm talking about is the reason why I thought the Chargers played the Chiefs better than the Ravens did. The Chargers executed their game plan Like they did what they thought felt like they had to do. Like here's our approach on offense. Here's how we're going to attack.
It wasn't a winning game plan though. I mean it was a game plan to not get, it was a game plan to be competitive is what that was from the Chargers.
But honestly, if you're a lesser team to Kansas City, that's probably the play. And then just pray they make a mistake. Because trying to go toe for toe is an even worse strategy because you can't do it. Not against this offense, not against this team. And the defense, for any of the holes you think they might have, are opportunistic. If you start getting up and down the way the Chiefs are, they're also more practiced against that kind of offense. Like, they know what to do against the high-flying, okay? So you can't fool them on that end. To me, I think a boring game plan against the Chiefs is fine. Yes, be aggressive in those moments when it's 4th-and-3 and you're down the goal. Don't kick the field goal. And if you're the Chargers, if you're going to be aggressive some of the time, be aggressive all of the time and do that. But inside the actual game plan, to me, they ran their offense the way they would normally run their offense. And I did not see that from the Ravens, and I didn't see that from the Texans. And it's not every game that the Chiefs win teams do that, but they do fall into those traps of trying to keep up with the Joneses, and it's not a good strategy against Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, I think there has to be some credit also given to the Chiefs, in this case their defense, for why that continually happens, or at least it appears to continually happen. Like, there has to be some understanding that whether or not you think, hey, why are you doing this, and why are you not staying consistent with what you believe that they should be doing? There's probably also just some reasons for that besides, well, we feel like we've got, the Chiefs are going out there and slinging the ball around 40 plus times. We got to do that. Yeah, maybe that happens at times, especially if you were the player yourself.
That happened against the Ravens on Monday.
If you're Lamar Jackson, you might have the case, Cody. But I think also to some extent, it's also how the defense is playing you to a certain extent too. Like after that first drive, I feel like the Chiefs knew like that the read option and then the triple option at times that we would see from Baltimore. Like the Chiefs, they finally figured that out very quickly after the first drive. And at some point in time, you can say, hey, you just got to keep doing it. Why are you passing it? I agree with why are you passing it when it's a 3rd-and-3, for example, or 3rd-and-2. Like, why?
And that's what they do. They try to
they are doing that. But overall, like the actual game plan itself, sometimes the defense as the game goes on will dictate what you're able to do. And that's where I go back to yesterday when we were talking a lot about how good this Chiefs defense can be and where they're at. The Chiefs absolutely, along with the offense just building a lead, heavily dictated what the Baltimore Ravens were able to do. I'm sure it was a combination of both. I don't think it's as simple, man, where it's, hey, Baltimore just totally said, screw it, we're going to have to throw the ball all over the place now and try to win that way. I think a lot of it is
I think
what the
it
Chiefs
happens
did.
Accidentally in the game, well, and the play calling slowly just keeps turning that way because the Chiefs put the pressure back. I get it, but again, the Texans beat the Chiefs. Look, I'm not saying you're definitively going to win if you just keep running the ball, but you can't. I'm telling you this, you won't win if you try to do it the way the Ravens did it. Like, I'm just going to pass myself out of this problem. So, no. I mean, look, you got Russell Wilson, try to pass your way out of the problem, okay? Fine. But if you're like every other team in the NFL and your quarterback's pretty good, or, you know, really good, but like it's impossible to say, let's keep up with those things. Like, that's where I would say teams fall into that trap a lot. I think a lot of times,
The Ravens ran the ball 21 times. You say, well, that's not a whole lot when and Clyde ended up getting 20. Now he got a couple at the end. But I go back to, let's not forget this game. Like
the
Chiefs scored 21 points in the second quarter. The Ravens were in a huge hole. The game shouldn't have been as close as it ended up being.
I know, but
of course they were going to pass the ball more.
What happens is you pass more against them, and you either have shorter drives that don't end up in touchdowns, or you have shorter drives, you end up scoring, which is great, and then you just give more and more and more possessions to the Chiefs, which doesn't... Look, playing keep away from the Chiefs is actually not the worst strategy, in the sense that... I'm not saying you just run. If you're a passing offense, pass against the Chiefs. I got no problem with that. But if you're a rushing heavy offense, you need to limit possessions for Kansas City any way you can. And if you're a dynamic rushing offense, if you're down 21 in the second quarter, and it takes you 9 minutes to go down and score a touchdown, well, at least before half, they don't get the ball back to go stick it on you again. Like, there is something to, like, I'm not saying, like, don't get me into the time of possession thing. I'm not a time of possession guy. I'm not saying the Chiefs' success is either dictated or not dictated by the amount of time they hold the ball. Because that's a QB wins with a Z mentality when it comes to looking at wins or losses. And I'm not going to, I don't think that way. But I do think that there is a limiting possessions part of what you can do for Kansas City. And I think the way you limit your possessions is do what you do offensively. So I think most teams aren't quick score, fast strike, sure, passing offenses. If you're not that, trying to do that in the middle of a game against the Chiefs really only ins and outs.
Are we surprised, too, though, you look at the Chiefs offensively, what they've done? See, they continue to try to get Darwin Thompson involved in spots. Now, it's not a ton. If you look through the first three games, Darwin Thompson has 6 rushes, okay? So it's not as if he's touching the ball a whole lot to begin with. So I don't think this is as big of a problem as maybe overall people are making it out to be. He's got 6 carries on this season. That's how many times he's been given the ball. Now, he did have the fumble, of course, which at the time didn't feel maybe huge, but as the game went on, you went back. You said, well, that was the point where it swung things a little bit and allowed Baltimore to maybe have a chance. Remember, Baltimore did get it within one possession, shockingly enough, in that football game. Had no business, by the way, being a one-possession game. No. But the fumble swung things a little bit, and it seems like the Chiefs are still wanting to get him involved while they have Clyde, and I know Clyde can't get the ball every single down, but also why they still have Darrell Williams, who is healthy now. And so
Yes. They
obviously really like Darwin. It does feel a bit forced, which I know is weird to say when he's only gotten 6 carries, but still, if you're only going to use
it. Feel forced.
But when you're only doing 6 carries, yeah, but it does feel that way overall. Like, I'm willing to give him another game or two where he still gets a carry or so, but you just simply cannot have those mistakes. And you notice what Darwin Thompson did not get a carry the rest of the game after that.
It's like Mean Girls, like, quit trying to make fetch happen. Like, I got nothing against Darwin. I think he's a good back. But I told you I thought Darrell should have been the guy right behind Clyde. Figured he'd be the guy behind Clyde. And there's a reason why I like Darrell's game right now. I think Darwin is just one of those guys that needs more seasoning before you can trust him regularly. And it seems like to me what the Chiefs are doing is trying to find, like, the Darwin Thompson drive every game, which other teams do, right? Like, the Vikings will find the Alexander Madison drive, or the Cowboys will find the Pollard drive. Like, teams do this, but it doesn't seem like Darwin's the right guy to be doing it with right now.
Well, remember,
they don't need to do that.
Yeah, remember, he got that fourth last week. He got the big 4th-and-1.
Yeah.
And he converted it. Fair
he
enough.
He did. But it feels like they're trying to have the Darwin drive once a game, and I don't get it.
Darrell's fine. Yeah. Darrell's Spencer Ware. Spencer Ware's done a lot of good things for this organization. Just use Darrell.
Yeah, Darrell Williams wasn't available last week against the Chargers, so in that opportunity, that 4th-and-1, it would have been interesting if Darrell and Darwin Thompson were available against the Chargers, that 4th-and-1. Is that Darrell Williams getting that carry, or was that Darwin Thompson? Because Darrell Williams, by the way, only had 2 kids, just as many carries as Darwin Thompson had, or as Darwin Thompson had against the Ravens. He had 7 carries, though, against the Texans week 1, did Darrell Williams. 7 carries, 23 yards, and then had 2 carries for 6 yards against Baltimore. So just something to keep an eye on. I tweeted during the game, I was like, after that fumble, though, you need to sit him down. Like, he can't play the rest of this game.
Oh,
like,
I saw that one of his former teammates was after you.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. That means one of his teammates was searching for Darwin Thompson.
You can't just be sticking criticism out on the internet.
There was nothing like overly, it was literally pretty simple. Like, yeah, Darwin Thompson needs to take a seat the rest of the game. There was nothing all that personal or anything about it.
And you did say he should be benched. His teammate's probably not going to feel that way.
The response from his teammate, apparently is a teammate at Utah State, I guess, and he quote tweeted me and said, essentially, with a bunch of laughing emojis, "You look like someone that played JV while you were a senior."
Awfully generous of him, by the way. Awfully generous.
And I quote tweeted back, and I was like, "You actually think I played football in high school? Like, are you kidding me? There's no chance."
Did you even play football in, like, middle or elementary
Cody,
school?
Never.
Yeah, never.
So,
besides, like, flag and gym class?
Yeah, and I broke a finger. So there you go. So, like, that's my experience. So when I'm looking at that, I quote tweet, and by the way, he deleted his tweet. Not me. He deleted his tweet. Because I think he realized what was going on in that game.
Well, I mean, he did get benched for the rest of the game, so maybe maybe Darwin said, "Hey, man, I don't need you to..."
In the middle of the game? I don't think so. He deleted before the game was over.
That's awfully quick. I guess maybe he thought better of it. Maybe you should think better about your criticism of Darwin, as I criticize him a little. To me, it's more about the fact that it does feel like they are trying to make, like, they want him to have, like, a small feature in this offense. And Andy's always kind of liked guys like that. And look, Darwin Thompson, if that ball, there was a pass in that game, Darwin Thompson had room for days on a screen pass that eventually got tipped at the line. It looked like it might have gone for a touchdown had they not do that. There is some stuff, like, I like him in space, and maybe there's some way to use him, but I wonder if they'd be better served, like, getting him and Clyde out there and then making people guess, just putting more receivers out there, more choices where it could go. Because right now it just seems like they're just sticking him in there in place of Clyde for one drive a game, and then when he's in there, he's getting the ball. Like, everyone knows he's getting the ball. I feel like I'm okay with trying it. See, like, I'm not, like, full-blown certain. I think I'm okay with trying it. I just feel like there's a way I want to see them negotiate it a little bit better, because right now it feels forced and like it's slowing the offense down more than it's
and it's not
like
a lot
making it more dangerous. If you're going to use a guy like Darwin, I want to like make it more dangerous.
It's magnified when he's used on a fourth and one with the game on the line.
Of course,
and again, to his credit, he got what got the job done. But then you know certainly when you fumble the football and you're only getting he's only had six carries. I mean, so we talk about him. It's not as if they're giving him six carries a game. He has six carries through three games and. Through three games in which the other back he was competing with for carries didn't even play in Darrell Williams in week two against the Chargers due to injuries. So it's not like he's being used heavily by
any means,
but it's really interesting and something to keep an eye on, I think, as the season goes on. Reminder, we'll head out to Arrowhead as soon as they're good to go. You'll hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Eric Fisher, and Juan Thornhill, their first since the first time talking to the media since the Ravens game wrapped up and had all the post-game press conference. And we'll see if Andy gives us a more definitive confirmation on L'Jarius Sneed. Remember that news from this morning from the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, reporting that L'Jarius Sneed broke his collarbone. And so that can mean a wide variety of things. It definitely means if that's the case, he's not playing.
If it's no surgery.
You know he's not playing Sunday, but how long? Are we talking a month? Are we talking multiple? Are you talking 2 months? Yeah, and so that's going to be the big thing. And it's a blow for Kansas City, but I do think they're prepared, man, to be able to handle it for a couple reasons. One week from now, you get Bashaud Breeland back. That's a huge boost. Huge boost for the team.
Tell cover that for sure.
You have to figure a week from now, whether I don't know if how long the cast has to be on, but it's another week playing at least with the cast on his hand. And
he's probably a few weeks away from being totally out of that.
And he played, he was able to play on Monday night.
A decent amount, yep.
And I feel like they were able to plug Rashad Fenton in a little bit and gave you some good time, some good snaps on Monday night as well. So I think they can patch this thing together. Yes, it continues to hit the depth, unfortunately, at a position we already questioned overall heading into this season. But they've been up to the task, and I think, with Spags and what they've been able to do, I go back to Tyrann Mathieu, who actually graded out as one of his better games of the year. I still think they've had to hold him back a little bit because of the issues that they've had with injuries in the secondary. I can't wait till, and now maybe it's going to be delayed even more if Sneed's going to be out for a while, to where he can kind of be let loose again. A little bit and become even more of the defensive playmaker that we know he can be as well, on top of just being what is one of the most solid safeties in all of football.
Well, and Kansas City kind of needed a second version of that too, Gold, and they found that in L'Jarius Sneed because he was getting his hands on the ball. Like, it just seemed like he was the magnet for it because maybe they were avoiding the Tyrann Mathieu magnet because they didn't have to because of the lack of depth. I'm not quite as just like, oh, it'll be fine as you, but it's hitting at a slightly different part of the better part of the schedule. Their next two of their next three games I would consider difficult. Obviously, until they want to prove to me that they can do anything against if the Raiders can do, beat the Chiefs on a regular basis, just count me out, right? Like, I'm not worried about that outside of those things yet. But I would tell you that, losing the cornerback who was saving you from losing a cornerback feels like is kind of a big deal, right? Like, we talked about, they were able to manage the Bashaud Breeland suspension and the Charvarius Ward injury because they had L'Jarius Sneed. And now they won't have L'Jarius Sneed. So, that part of it does seem kind of important to me. I think, we'll get a good test again this weekend. But you do have Ward back, so again, you're only missing one for a week, and then Breeland's back.
And I think Breeland will be
good
to go right away, man.
It feels like the timing might work out okay, but with any kind of surgery, you're still obviously concerned.
And Breeland's been out, as we know, because of suspension, not injury. So I don't think it's going to be it's going to take a couple weeks for him to get up to speed with this defense. He was on this team a year ago. He knows Spags' defense. I don't think it's going to be a huge adjustment. I think Breeland, when you get to the Raiders game and Raider week and all of that, he'll be ready to go. And so, timing-wise, that part works out. I disagree with, the timing of the games necessarily, because we've been talking all about how this is the toughest stretch of the schedule, and it's happening right in the middle of it. Yeah, you're getting some reinforcements back, and Bashaud Breeland. But, we'll learn maybe a little bit more today if we get a definitive answer if there's any surgery involved or anything like that for a broken collarbone. And the Chiefs haven't confirmed that L'Jarius Sneed injury, but no reason to doubt that that's the case based off of the reporting. And it didn't look good. Right away he grabbed for it. And I think should have had an interception. Let's head right out to Arrowhead. Here's Andy Reid.
Sneed is, as far as injuries go here, Sneed is going to have his clavicle fixed. It was fractured. And so we'll just see how that works for him as far as the time away and all. And then Chris Jones has a groin strain, and we'll see what he can do today. But really, that's the only the only players that would potentially miss. Snead definitely missing. With that, listen, we look forward to the challenge of playing the Patriots. We know what they're about. They're a heck of a football team, and they're as well coached as anybody in the National Football League. And on both sides of the ball and special teams, they're tough and aggressive and well-schooled. So we've got to make sure we have a good week of practice. Nobody does it better than Bill does it in this league, and he's time-tested. He's been doing it a while. So, and then Cam's playing great football for him. So we got to make sure that we get to practice here and that we focus in on what we need to do to play our best game against them. So with that, Tyler.
Go first to Adam Teicher. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Andy, just checking on Andrew Wiley. Is he going to be practicing today?
Yeah, he'll go through practice today.
Let's go next to Todd Lebo. Go ahead, Todd.
Hey, Coach, you've prepared to go against Bill Belichick teams a lot over the years. It's the first time in a long time you haven't had Brady over there to prepare for. You don't have a lot to look at. They didn't have exhibition games and stuff, but what do you think about the differences, or are there differences with the way their offense runs with Cam there compared to Tom, and what that challenge will be like?
Yeah, well, they do a heck of a job on the offensive side, and they've got a great coordinator who's been doing it a long time and done it a bunch of different ways, and they've got good players. So Cam being in a role there that he is fully accepted and I think he's enjoying. So he's doing a great job, and so we anticipate them being able to run the ball, but don't be fooled, because Cam can throw the ball too very well, and they mix it up and have the flexibility to do so. And then defensively, again, they're always very well coached, and their scheme is as sound as can be, and they do quite a few things out of it.
Let's go next to Herbie. Go ahead, Herbie.
Hey, Coach, good morning. Yeah, the team has a pretty good protocol system in place, and with what's going on in Tennessee right now, how much have you used that as a teaching moment to emphasize to the players and the staff the importance to adhere to the protocols?
Yeah, well, and I'm not saying that they didn't. I mean, to the best of your ability, you have to do that. I mean, Braves was a good program there, and it's a pandemic. So, I mean, things can happen, and he's working through those now. But you've got to take as many precautionary measures as you can and try to stick with them. And then if something happens like that, then you've got to work through that. So we've all been coached up on it, and we're all trying to do the best we possibly can with it. So anyways, that's I hope that answers what kind of word what you need there.
Go next to Nate Taylor. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, Andy. I know we're getting Juan Thornhill today, and so I wanted to ask you about your safety play. Juan, Tyron, Tedrick, and Dan Sorensen played a lot on Monday night. You guys really haven't given up as many explosive plays as most defenses have in the league so far. Just what have you liked most about that secondary group that you have, particularly at the safety position?
I think they have great communication, and David does a nice job of giving them indicators and things to work with. And then they talk and they watch tape and they spend the time to do that. Every week's a different challenge. You know, it's no different this week. I mean, as a safety, you got to be on your A game. So it ends up being very important, whether you're covering the pass game or working with the run game. But they've taken each challenge so far and really try to work it the best way they possibly can. I think communication is a big part of it. Yeah.
Let's go next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Good morning, Coach. I've noticed Pat's been spreading it around maybe even a bit more than last year. I was curious, how have you seen maybe his strides through these 3 weeks in pre and post-snap processing?
Yeah, no, he's done a nice job with that. I think he has a lot of trust in the guys, and opportunities have called to where maybe it's not the primary guy. Maybe it goes to a different receiver, and he's been able to do it and see it and do it well. So that part won't change. I mean, when EB puts everything together, he does it with the fact that he gets everybody involved. So, you know, I know there's only one ball. I mean, the guys know that too, but you try to give guys an opportunity to work their strengths.
We have time for a couple more. Let's go Sam and then Sarin. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Andy, I wanted to ask you about the long pass to McColl for the touchdown on third and long. Yep. When you call that play, I know you've got a good feeling about it, but did it play out the manner in which you had anticipated when you called it? And was there anything else that specific that might have stood out to you about the way that play was executed?
Yeah, so Mike Kafka saw something on tape that he liked there, and so we put the play in. And then it was for that. That was one of the opportunities that we had to call it in that situation. We had it in a couple different places, but we got the look that we wanted. And I think it was, it was a long pitch and catch, but it ended up being a nice throw and a nice grab. So
let's go left to Sarin. Go ahead, Sarin.
Coach, I know. You know, you guys have had a lot of different injuries over on the defensive side of the ball, yet, you know, it's been a good year, right, for the defense. How much more of a scramble is there going on behind the scenes? Because you come in with guys down, and then it seems like somebody goes down, important guys go down in the game as well, and yet there hasn't been really a drop-off. I know Tyran, you know, talked about letting some scores in that first game late, and maybe that could be indicative. But for the most part, you know, there's been kind of a fire drill over there at times, and yet there hasn't been any drop-off. How much more is maybe going on behind the scenes than we see since the results have been there?
Yeah, so, you know, your normal thing, Sarin, is you go through all the, you know, the walkthroughs, and you go through the installs and more walkthroughs, and then you practice. And so the guys have been diligent with it. The guys that have been backup players that are now playing have been diligent with making sure they learn the game plan. So easy it is for a relief pitcher just to kind of back off to that, we'll be fine. But these guys have actually jumped in and done it. And then I think Spags and David and Sam do a good job of rotating their guys back there and trying to get everybody in. A little bit that same thing, you know, we do it with all the spots, but back there they've got all these combinations that they're using. So everybody kind of gets a piece of it and has to get in and work it. But I think that's helped, I guess, cutting the long story short. I mean, it's helped to work that way.
Yeah. Coach, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Yep.
All right, that's Chiefs head coach Andy Reid out at Arrowhead. He did confirm the news, L'Jarius Sneed, a fractured clavicle. And to quote Andy Reid, he said he'll likely have it fixed. We can assume that means surgery obviously. Yeah. A fractured clavicle there. No word on a time frame, but doesn't seem very good, obviously, anytime soon to see L'Jarius Sneed back on the football field. Did mention also Chris Jones has a groin strain. Those are the two guys he said that, you know, one for sure, obviously, in Sneed, but the other that may be in doubt for this Sunday, Chris Jones as well. They'll see how that goes today. But also good news on the Andrew Wiley front, though, that he's good. Whatever was going on with his stomach on Monday night, he's good to go.
Yeah, Chris Jones a bit concerning, only, but like the idea that he's already going out to test it, to me, actually, is a pretty good sign because it's, you know, I mean, right now it's only Wednesday. So if he's testing it today, if things go well today, then he's, you know, definitively a lock, right, for Sunday's game. But they also, you know, they don't have to have him to beat the Patriots. I say that knowing that I just told you he's their best defensive player. The only reason I would say that normally is because, I mean, legitimately, the truth is that the Patriots don't scare me nearly as much as they used to because of who they are now.
I think it's huge if he doesn't play because I think he could disrupt, you know, Cam Newton is how they
want
to run
the ball. He can just win a game, sure.
He can disrupt things on the offensive line. Cam's kind of a patient runner at times when he himself is carrying the football. And so, no, I think that's something absolutely going to have to watch, and disappointing to get the confirmation on the L'Jarius Sneed clavicle fracture.
Yeah. I mean, that would be nice. I mean, you know, especially because you don't want to lose who has been your best corner. Let's just say Charvarius Ward generally had been over the last few years, but this year, L'Jarius Sneed had been your best corner, and then you got a chance you wouldn't have your best defensive lineman? Yeah, I'm not saying that's insignificant if Chris Jones can't play, but I like that he's already testing it. Plus, the Chiefs said at the end of the game on Sunday, they didn't think it was significant, and he's already testing it. That's a pretty good sign. You're listening to 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. KCSP Kansas City, WDAF HD2 Liberty, radio.com sports station. I just think that, you know, if you're like, I'm not going to sweat Chris Jones' injury yet. Let's find out how he tests today. If he's a limited participant, you know, how he can progress throughout the week will really be the thing. But the Chiefs from the beginning have made that sound like it's not a big deal.
Yeah, let's hope that's the case. Let's certainly hope that's the case as the week continues to progress, and you'll eventually find out who's full. We'll learn later this afternoon who was a full participant, who was limited. I think it's safe to say that Chris Jones is going to be a limited participant, at least today in practice, just based off of what you just heard there from Andy Reid as well. He was also just asked about what's going on with the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers game. We know that game has been postponed, could happen on Monday, if not on Tuesday. And he just mentioned that obviously it doesn't mean that the
they
Titans
follow
did
the protocol.
Yeah, and I think that's important.
Because it's
way,
not
that,
a bubble.
That's for everything. Sports or not sports. Just because someone tests positive for COVID does not mean they were being irresponsible.
They were being irresponsible.
I said it doesn't, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't mean
the assumption for a lot of people is someone was being irresponsible. That's not always the case.
Correct.
Now you find details out sometimes. Cardinals going to casinos, Marlins going to clubs or whatever, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's different, but nobody has suggested that whatsoever to this point with what's gone on with the Tennessee Titans. We'll head out to Arrowhead here momentarily as soon as Patrick Mahomes is good to go, and you'll hear from Patrick Mahomes, who obviously yesterday too, the big news for him, congratulations to him and Brittany Matthews as they are expecting their first child, which is really cool to see that.
I told Danny if she wanted to, she could just type up all of the parenting advice.
I don't think you need your
advice. I've been giving her, and then she can just pass it along to Patrick and Brittany. See, look, I'm helping all. Why are you going to say it like that? Like I'm just like, I've got no good parenting advice to give here.
Yeah. Something tells me he's going to have plenty of people handing over.
He will. And it's better to listen to the people around you than me, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like I've given some good actual, like this isn't baby book advice. I'm giving you this is real life stuff we're talking about. I don't like mess around. I give the real stuff, Gold. It doesn't matter. Are you going to if you ever have a kid, are you going to take
any
of my,
am I going to ask you for advice?
Yeah.
Probably not.
You've seen my kids. They seem fine.
They
seem well adjusted, do they not?
They do.
Well, then what's the problem? Why wouldn't you want my advice?
It's more you. It's not that it's you.
Oh, I see. It's a lack of trust in me. If my wife gave you advice,
I'll see
you
how
might feel
it pans
a little
out. Like
that'd
Danny, when you give her advice, I'll see how that
there
advice
a lot
worked
of
for
line.
Her.
Oh, that's true. You do get a test.
We'll see how
you
that
get
works.
An actual tester. We'll have to check back with her after this all happens just to find out if she's used any of the advice. And if it's working, to any amount. I did look up, by the way, some information on just traditional clavicle surgeries.
Oh, let's hear it.
It doesn't, here's the problem. Like, obviously, if it was no surgery, it would have been a lot more heal time. You can recover from a clavicle surgery at the NFL level within 6 to 7 weeks, but I think you'd be probably safe to assume that it's longer than that. So maybe bank on 8. If you're feeling good about it, Gold. 6 to 8. If you say it's 8 weeks from now, he would return for.
You're looking at like the Chiefs Bucks game is potentially in play. Chiefs Broncos game, November 20th.
Yeah, those final November 5 29. Or 6 games of the season.
All right, let's head out to Arrowhead. Here's Patrick Mahomes.
Hey, Patrick. You mentioned after the game that the Ravens showed you a look that maybe you hadn't seen on film. Coach Belichick has made a living really off of that. I was wondering how you and Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid go through the process of preparing for maybe things that aren't on film. How do you go about that?
Yeah, it takes a lot. I mean, being able to watch all what they've done this year, being able to watch what they've done multiple years in the past. I mean, luckily for us, we've played them a good amount of times now, so we can see all the different types of stuff that they presented us and offenses like us. And so, there's going to be unscouted stuff. There's going to be stuff that he's going to throw out there. I mean, that's why he's one of the best coaches of all time. We have to make sure that we are able to make adjustments quickly and find ways to not have negative plays and have positive ones, even if it's unscouted.
Let's go next to Karen Kornacki. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, Patrick.
How are you doing?
Great. What a great year for you. I mean, first of all, you're the Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. You beat Baltimore. You show who's the top quarterback. And then you announce you're going to be a dad. I mean, can you put in perspective just all this great stuff for you? And, of course, the most important thing being a dad.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely exciting. I mean, being able to kind of grow up and have these dreams of having a family and playing in the NFL and for that stuff to start happening and really coming into truth and everything like that. I mean, it's really cool. And so I'm just excited that I have a lot of great people around me and I'm in a great organization and I'm able to live out these dreams day by day.
Let's go next to Herbie. There you go, Herb. Go ahead.
Hey, Patrick, how you doing today?
Doing good.
Hey, in light of everything that's going on right now in Tennessee and Minnesota, and I know you've got some pretty strict protocols that you approach how this pandemic's going, how much have you reflected back on these last 24, 48 hours on things that you need to do to maybe tighten up some safety protocols?
I honestly feel like us as an organization has done a great job of holding each other accountable. I mean, it's something that can happen to anybody. You don't look down on anybody that it's happening to, but it's kind of the way 2020 and the world has been. But I feel like Rick and his staff and the whole organization has done a great job of keeping us socially distanced, making us wear masks, even when people try to slip and not wear them, but making sure that they're wearing masks, holding each other accountable. And then you just kind of accept what happens. And so I'm just going to make sure that we keep emphasizing that, make sure that we continue to wear our masks, socially distance, and try to prepare ourselves so that we're not harming anyone else or ourselves.
Let's go next to Sam Ellinger. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Patrick, this is a little bit of an off the wall question, but you would have been, I think, in sixth grade when the Patriots went 16-0, 18-1. Do you have any memories of watching that team? I'm also curious if that's something that's even 1% on your radar of going undefeated this year.
Yeah, I have some memories for sure. I mean, when they had Moss and Brady and they were lighting up the scoreboard and then making the run and everything like that. I mean, that was an amazing, amazing football team. But I haven't thought that far ahead. I mean, we're just 3-0 right now. I think that if you start thinking like that is when you lose football games. If you look at us last year, we came off a big win against the Ravens and then dropped a few games right there in this kind of October month. And so I think you just have to prepare week by week, day by day, and know that you're going to have a great challenge every single time you step on that football field. And so you can't take anybody for granted, and you have to make sure that you really accept that challenge every single day.
Go next to Matt McMullen. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Patrick. Back-to-back road games, empty stadiums, obviously. Just how excited are you to get back to Arrowhead?
I'm very excited, I promise. I'm very, very excited to be there, have the fans there, be in Arrowhead, and kind of get feed off that energy. I mean, obviously, we've learned to play in the empty stadium and kind of give ourselves our own energy on the sidelines and rooting for each other. But then to have Chiefs Kingdom there with us, rooting us on, I'm excited for to be at Arrowhead and be able to play in front of some fans.
Let's go next to Adam Teicher. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Patrick. I want to ask you about Stephon Gilmore. You've played against him a number of times now. What is it about him that stands out to you? And is there something about him that you and any quarterback really needs to know about him when you're playing against him?
I think all the quarterbacks know he's really, really good. That would be the main thing. I mean, he's a guy that's big, he's physical, and he's fast. And being with Coach Belichick, you can really tell that he really understands route concepts. He really understands alignments, what routes guys can run from certain alignments. And I think that's just made him better and better each year. So it's a great challenge for us. That entire defense is of every single time we play them. But he's a guy that you have to know where he's at on the field. And you have to know that he's going to be a physical guy that's going to really contest every single play that you go his way.
Let's go next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Patrick, I was wondering, and I know you're not going up against him, but with Cam Newton, just what are your memories of watching him, and how much, when you were coming up, did you sort of mimic and try to do some of the things that he does?
Yeah, I wish I could do some of the things that he does as far as how physical he is and the way he's able to make plays happen. But he's a great football player. Someone like you said, I watched when he was at Auburn. He actually went to Blinn College, which is down there kind of close to East Texas, and so he played against like TJC and some of those junior colleges. And I see his highlights then when I was back in high school in those days. And so he's a great football player, and he's in a great spot now, and he's playing really good football. So you understand it's going to be a great challenge to go up against this team, knowing that they're going to be able to really move the football, and hopefully our defense is going to come out there and play like they did this last week.
Let's go next to Harold Koontz. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, Pat. You just continue to have success against teams that blitz all the time. Just what goes into that success and how you've been able to do so far? And my other question to you is, if there had to be a player who's an uncle to the new baby on the team, who would you trust as the babysitter?
The first question, I probably would say, first of the blitz, I think the biggest thing that we do is we prepare. It's all preparation. We really prepare for blitz coverages and different looks, different zone, fire zones, different man blitzes. And we have guys that's quick enough the routes and get themselves open. And then whenever we want to take a shot versus the blitz, I think guys do a great job of making sure they make distinct angles where I can throw the ball to space and let them make plays. And we've done a great job of that. And then the second part, as far as like an uncle, I would say like Matt Moore or someone like that that's responsible. I can't let like Trav or anybody do it. I mean, you never know what would happen.
Let's go next to Nate Taylor. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, Patrick, congratulations. I wanted to ask you, because you guys are so good at throwing the ball and completing balls downfield, that your defense is one of the best, at least so far this year, at containing teams from not having big plays. When you have Tyrann Mathieu, Juan Thornhill, Dan Sorensen, and even a new guy in Tedrick Thompson, just what do you think that they provide for that defense so that the opposing offense isn't able to get big chunk plays the way you guys are on offense?
I think the biggest thing they provide is they're gonna be right there contesting every single deep pass, and that's the difference maker. Whenever you have guys that are contesting every pass and making it have to be a perfect throw and a perfect catch every single time, it's hard. It's hard on the offense. And so they might give up a catch here and there, but they're going to be right there contesting it, and they take respect and responsibility of making sure that no big plays happen.
We've got time for a couple more guys. We'll go Sam and then Seren. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Patrick. We didn't ask you much about the long touchdown to Mecole Hardman after the game. You obviously took a really deep backdrop on that. Was that what you anticipated doing before the snap? I guess, what did you see on that play and also before the play?
Yeah, it was. I think it was one of those kind of looks where they did that kind of package of blitzes that I wasn't expecting. And there was a guy free. And right off the snap, I knew that the guy was going to be able to come free. And I knew we had the coverage over the top that we liked. And so instead of having to, like, maybe check it down or throw it, I wanted to buy time and let Mecole run his route to put the ball out there. And once I saw him make the first move, the double move, I knew that with his speed, he could run underneath it. So I just tried to put it out there as far as I could. As we call it, it was probably a little bit of a toaster. It wasn't a very good spiral, but it got out there enough where he was able to catch it and score.
We'll go last to Seren. Go ahead, Seren.
Patrick, I think your numbers in September are like 32 touchdowns, no INTs, right? They're pretty good in all the months, right? But they're off the charts in September. What do you attribute that success to, and how you guys are able to be so efficient, to start the seasons?
I truly believe it's how we run training camp. I mean, Coach Reed puts us in these situations that are very game-like, that they're very similar to the situations that we really presented in the game, and we're prepared for it. And I think that's a big credit to him and our whole coaching staff, is they put us in situations in training camp that we're prepared for everything right out of the gate. And then now it's about building and keep getting better and carrying that momentum throughout the season.
Patrick, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
All right, that is Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes out at Arrowhead. We'll head back out there as soon as Eric Fisher and Juan Thornhill are good to go. Pat was joking when asked about who would be the most responsible, I guess, uncle on the team for his future child.
Was he going to throw Travis on the bus?
He said
like
Matt Moore would be the responsible uncle, but he can't let Travis Kelce babysit because, quote, you never know what would happen. So, yeah, and he was, of course, also asked about his month of September, which is just nuts. And the month of September in his career is absurd. 9 wins and 32 touchdowns and not a single pick.
Yeah, being undefeated with 0 picks, and especially this year, somehow it's more impressive this year because the schedule wasn't like a cupcake. And then on top of it, it's like every single thing they got done was incredible to go with it, right? I mean, it's those parts of the game that you're like, how is this even plausible?
All right, let's go out to Arrowhead and hear from someone that caught a touchdown pass on Monday night.
Hey, Eric, good afternoon, man.
How you doing?
Hey, you had mentioned during training camp that you had all pro tackle as one of your wants. How safe is it to add all pro wide receiver? And as a second part to that, what was going through your mind when you knew that play was getting called and when the ball was in the air?
Yeah, we had to go heavy personnel on that. And once Wiley was down, I didn't think there was a chance we were calling it. So kind of surprised me, which might've been a good thing. That way I wasn't thinking about it the whole game. But when it came in, I went and reported eligible, and luckily kind of tricked the defense on the field there. And wide open over there in the end zone. And Pat made me work for that one a little bit, but it's all right. We practice those kind of things, and it was a memory I'll have for life.
Let's go next to Matt McMullen. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Eric. I know you played some tight end way back in the day. I'm just curious the last time you were in the end zone.
Last time I was in the end zone, so we ran the Veer in high school. I was an outside linebacker for my sophomore and junior year, but we had a tight end package on the goal line. Just kind of like throw it up to me in the corner of the end zone. So junior year was probably the last. Before that, freshman year when I played quarterback, got a couple touchdowns. But yeah, haven't been in the end zone much.
Let's go next to Karen Kornacki. Go ahead, Karen.
I hope you've watched video of it. You are stunningly, you know, athletic. But I want to ask you about the Patriots. You guys have faced one defensive front, one defensive, you know, the strength of these teams have been on defense, especially up front. When you look at the Patriots, again, they're a strong defensive team. And how do you prepare for them? Like you have Baltimore and the Chargers, or, you know, is there something specific about them you prepare for?
Oh, yeah, they got a good defense. Obviously, they're winning football games, and defense is a big part of that. And, you know, so I think as an O-line, we're just trying to prepare with the same mentality, making sure we're studying, making sure we're watching the film, what they're doing, and just practicing the right way. We practice with a game-like tempo, and I think that's been paying off for us. And to keep that going, it's a challenge, but it's, you know, one we're up for. And Coach Reed, you know, doesn't accept anything but it. So, you know, we're excited for another challenge this week, and, you know, the challenges will just continue. We got a big bullseye on our back, you know, coming off the Super Bowl win, and, you know, we've started this thing right. We just got to keep it going.
Let's go next to Steve Walls. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, what's happening, Fish?
What's up?
Hey, with only a limited number of fans at the game on Monday, on the TV broadcast, Patrick could be heard calling out the blitz with his pre-snap read of the defense. Is that one of the areas in his game where you feel like he has progressed?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a knack for it. He's doing a great job seeing that stuff, you know, but as an O-line, we're also preparing for that stuff. We knew what was coming the other night, and, you know, obviously we call it a flavor of the week. You know, they're gonna tweak it every week a little differently. You know, we'll see something different than what's been on film this week. Also, we just, you know, once we see it once in the game, we make a sideline adjustment for what we're gonna, you know, how we're gonna handle that, and we just, you know, keep doing our thing. But yeah, I mean, you're not always gonna see exactly what you see on film, but we just handle that like pros and keep on rolling.
Looks like we've got four more hands up, so we'll just go right down the line. Let's start with Todd Lebo. Go ahead, Todd.
Hey, Eric, a couple of things. First off, it looked to me on the TV coverage like you might have wiped your hands on Patrick's towel and said something to him right before that play, if you could take me through that. And then the second part is just about having, you know, Wiley out right before the game. You've got a new guy next to you, just kind of what the cohesion of the line has been so far this year on those quick things where you have to have a change right before a game and just how you've been working with Osimile.
Yeah, I did I did wipe my hands off. If you come down in the trenches mid-game, you'll see there's a lot of sweat involved. So didn't want to let that one slip through my fingers. So I thought it was worth kind of sneakily wiping my hands off before that, and I'm glad I did. You know, I got it in and put it in the end zone. And then, yeah, I think when guys go down, we've been trained for those situations. It's not the first time. I mean, It's the trenches, man. Guys get hurt mid-game. You know, something happens before game. I think Coach Reed's big thing is, man, when next guy is in, we don't expect any drop-off. Mike came in and did a great job playing next to Clutch. He's been great. We got a good thing going. We just got to, you know, keep working, staying consistent, and doing what we do.
Let's go next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Eric, I'd imagine after the touchdown catch, there were some calls with some friends, family, mentors. I was curious if you could tell us your favorite conversation and what it was like.
Yeah, I had a lot of texts. It took me probably through yesterday to get back to everybody. I tried to do my best on that. But no, everyone was excited for me. I think, you know, one of the coolest stories about it is, you know, my dad actually mentioned, he's like, I wonder when the last time a tackle and a fullback scored in a game. I'd be curious on that. I have no idea. I don't really know how you figure that stuff out. But, you know, I think it was a pretty cool night for, you know, me and Sherm to get in the end zone. And, you know, especially on Monday Night Football, it's a memory I'll cherish.
Looks like we've got two left, Sarin and then Blair. Go ahead, Sarin.
Eric, I'm curious. You mentioned practicing that play. And I think Andy said, you know, you snuck that in, you know, maybe the times when the media wasn't there, right, getting some reps in. And Patrick talked about it, said, you know, he'd thrown it in practice and made you jump once. He wanted to kind of see what your reach was. I'm curious, how many times do you get a chance to practice a play like that? And then conversely, like, that's fun, right? The fans had fun. You guys clearly had fun with it. How much does Andy Reid having those kind of plays be it in the game, but also in practice and getting to do some kind of unorthodox things, maybe lighten the mood and perhaps make you guys a better team because it does make, you know, the work part of the equation fun.
Yeah, you know, I think to start off, Coach Reed's got quite the playbook. So when we say like we practice something a lot, I mean, 3 or 4 reps is practicing something a lot. You know, we got a lot of stuff to get through in the week, and you know, we get as much in as we can through our, in our walkthrough and practice. So yeah, I mean, I think during our practice week, we probably ran it 3 times, maybe, you know, and we just kind of get the spot where I needed to be. And, you know, with that, the end dropping with me a little bit, Pat had to put a little over the top, which I adjusted to, and I'm glad I was able to reel it in. And, you know, it was fun. But yeah, we just prepare for, you know, whatever Coach Reed's got dialed up, and we go out and execute.
Go to the last one. We'll go to Blair Kirkhoff. Go to Blair.
Hey, Eric, when media can go to practice, usually I guess it's on Fridays. One of the last things we see before we leave is offensive linemen catching passes, and that, you guys are jogging. And I'm just wondering, you know, it looks to us like, man, this is just something to get the blood flowing. But is there some value to that? And did it come in handy when, you know, when your number was called the other night?
Yeah. I mean, for the O-line and D-line, man, we get our work in big time on Wednesday and Thursday in coaches' practices. And, you know, Friday's like a polishing day. And I think starting off practice with that is like a little bit of a reward for working our butts off the last 2 days. You know, it just gets us in a good mindset, you know, ready to just polish all the details on Friday. Yeah, I guess, you know, over the years, obviously I've been doing that for 8 years on Friday practices. I'm guessing, you know, maybe my hands got a little better, and, you know, it's a fun period for us, but yeah, maybe possibly helped.
Fish, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks, guys.
That was Chiefs tackle Eric Fisher coming off of his first career touchdown. That was a pretty thrilling play to see on the offensive side. Chief safety Juan Thornhill should be stepping up to the podium in just a minute. But as we just heard from Andy Reid, he had some thoughts on the Patriots offense ahead of Sunday's game.
Yeah, well, they do a heck of a job on the offensive side. And they've got a great coordinator who's been doing it a long time and done it a bunch of different ways. And they've got good players. So Cam being in a role there that he is fully accepted and is, I think he's enjoying. So he's doing a great job. And so we anticipate them being able to run the ball, but don't be fooled because Cam can throw the ball too very well. And they mix it up and have the flexibility to do so. And then defensively, again, they're always very well coached, and their scheme is as sound as can be, and they do quite a few things out of it.
All right, let's head right back out to Arrowhead to hear from Chief Safety Juan Thornhill.
To get your quick thoughts on the improved defensive play from week 2 to week 3 and what kind of challenges Cam Newton with his arm strength and his running abilities bring to the defense.
With us coming in week 2, I just feel like we didn't come in mentally prepared. We were lackadaisical, and just guys weren't ready to play. And that's what it showed on the field. Like we were missing tackles, guys messing up on assignments and things like that. But then going into week 3, guys went into practice with a whole different mentality, thinking we're gonna stop the run. We're going to make those tackles. We're going to make the plays that we didn't make in the past week. So that was just one of the main things that we focused on. And obviously it showed. And then, like, with this week coming up, I mean, Cam Newton, he's a heck of a quarterback. He's a heck of an athlete. Going against these guys, they're very fundamentally sound. So it's definitely going to be a good game on our hands.
Let's go next to Adam Teicher. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Juan, looked like you were more involved in the action against Baltimore than you had been in the 2 previous games. I think you were the leading tackler for the Chiefs. Is that a sign that you feel like you're coming around? Do you feel like your game and your comfort level with where you are is maybe where ahead of where it was in the first 2 games?
First of all, I'd just like to say thanks to my coaches, because with a game I had the second game, I missed a lot of tackles. And most of the time, some coaches, they just give up on you and just try to take you out of the run game since I missed so many tackles. But then they had faith in me, and they still kept me in there and allowed me to go in and redeem myself and actually put me in there in those run fits to make those plays to show that I'm still there. And I definitely feel like I'm getting back to where I was. It was all about confidence, making those plays, just showing myself that I could do it.
Let's go next to Nate Taylor. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, Juan. Given what you know now after your rookie season, playing next to guys like Dan Sorensen and Tyrann Mathieu, just what do they give you the ability to do from a freedom standpoint that allows you guys not to give up so many big plays like other secondaries in the league?
With Dan and Tyrann, they've been in the NFL for a long time, so they've seen pretty much everything. They've been around all these quarterbacks. They know what these quarterbacks like to do, and they give me little tips that can help me out in my game. And I just follow the lead with them guys because them guys tell me what to do sometimes, and I also have to tell them what to do. We're bonded so well that it allow us to know what our teammate is going to do. Like, I know his strengths, he know my strengths, he know my weaknesses. So it allow us to play well together. That's why we don't give up as many big plays as some of these other secondaries make.
Let's go next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, Juan, I know you're always ready to intercept the football and maybe not necessarily always just looking for it, but how eager are you to get your hands on the football, and how much do you feel like that'll be a culmination of everything that you've sort of been working towards for the past 9-10 months?
You know, me, DB's dream is to always catch interceptions, and that's my biggest thing, but I'm not going to do anything extra. Just do my job, and hopefully the ball start coming my way and I'll make those plays. Because once you start trying too hard, that's when you start making mistakes. So if you just focus in on your technique and do what you're supposed to do, it'll supposed to come.
Let's go next to Seren Petro. Go ahead, Seren.
Juan, I know defensively one of the things, you know, first thing you got to do is the quarterback a threat to run, right? You're facing two guys in a row that are, but they're very different. I'm curious, you know, is it similar preparation from that standpoint of it, of how the guys run, or is it as different as it looks how they are when they're running the ball? Because they're very different type of guys running the ball.
Realistically, they're pretty much the same guy. I see it as, because we have four games in a row where we have a mobile quarterback pretty much. I mean, the Chargers, he was pretty mobile as well. But these guys are all very athletic. So it's pretty much going to be, I mean, just doing the same things that we've been doing. And just hopefully we just can come out with the win.
Got a couple more hands up. Let's go Sam and then Harold. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Juan, what's up, man? Got a couple things for you. The first one I wanted to ask about is coming back from your injury. Obviously, you get back on the field in week one, but do you have to sort of mentally remind yourself to be patient, that it's going to take some time to get back to playing the exact way you were able to play at the end of last season?
Yeah, I mean, talking about Tyrann and everything, he's been through it two times, and he told me that it's going to be sometimes I'm going to be so close to making a play, but I'm going to be a little short just because of the fact that I'm not comfortable and I'm not where I was. And like you said, I just have to remind myself, like, it's going to come. Just be confident, because that's the main thing. If you're not confident in your ability, you're not going to make any plays at all. So I just see myself getting better each week and just pushing myself even harder each week in practice. And hopefully I'll start making more plays.
The second thing I wanted to ask you about is the cornerbacks for you guys. I mean, has kind of been a turnstile here with just a suspension and injuries. And now Legarius is out. What's it been about the secondary that you guys have still been able to maintain your play despite those injuries back there?
You know, with football, things happen all the time. I mean, guys get hurt, guys get in trouble. Anything can possibly happen. But the thing is, like, we always have that next guy up mentality. So Coach Merritt, he always talking about how everyone's a starter in our defense, because you never know when your time's going to come. Like with Snead going down this week, we have other guys that have to step up and be ready to play those snaps that he had and be ready to make those plays that come their way.
Let's go last to Harold Kuntz. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, I was just curious about how, you know, introducing Tedrick back into the defense there, has he kind of helped you guys all mesh along? And then Tyrann Mathieu says he's pissed, but he's still optimistic. You kind of agree with that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, we played some good football last game, but there's still some things that we need to correct. We gave him some plays that we shouldn't. But, I mean, that's how we always going to go into each game. Our goal is to give up no points, obviously. Like, that's what we're trying to do. Like, we give up a touchdown, we're all pissed about it. But Tedrick, he's definitely stepped in. He's been playing a big role, making some big plays for us. So, hopefully we can keep him in there and he can keep making those plays.
Juan, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
All right.
All right, that was Chiefs safety Juan Thornhill. We're going to take a quick timeout right now, but when we get back, Cody and Gold sat down with our Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.